As always, it's wonderful to open my eyes, look up, and see your beautiful faces after a sit together. So this week, we're reading Parshat Shlach Lecha, the story of the scouts who are sent to learn about the promised land that the children of Israel are about to enter in a journey of 3 days' time. They're anticipating their arrival so close at hand. And our Etz Chaim translation reads, "The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Send men to scout the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelite people.'" Surely it sounds as if this is God's instruction. However, the version of this story that Moses retells in Dvarim, when they actually are about to enter the land, now 40 years later, not 3 days later, but 40 years later, and it's the next generation of Israelites, the original group having all died over the course of the journey. This story that Moses tells as they're about to enter is very different. Moses says, "Then all of you came to me and said, 'Let us send men ahead to reconnoiter the land for us.'" According to many commentaries, this shows a lack of faith in God's promise to protect and guide the Israelites to this good land. In fact, it sets in motion a mission that serves only to create a sense of terror of entering the land. The Israelites cry out against God, "Why is the Lord taking us to that land to fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be carried off. It would be better for us to go back to Egypt." And they said to one another, "Let's head back for Egypt." At first, I thought, so what's wrong with sending scouts out to see what lies ahead? Don't we always try to plan ahead? Don't we always try to figure out what's going to happen next and make plan A, plan B, figure out how we're going to deal with the future? However, I came to understand the significance, the spiritual significance of this need to check things out ahead of time, only after my journey back to a previous Torah reading, which I was reminded of simply by the sound and rhythm of the names of the two Torah readings. I was reminded of Shlach Lecha. From the name Shlach Lecha, I was reminded of Lech Lecha. Just like the title of the earlier Torah reading, Lech Lecha, God's use of the imperative verb is embellished by the addition of lacha at the end, bringing extra emphasis and new layers of meaning to a simple command. God could have said to Avram, "Lech, go," or to Moses, "Shlach, send." That would have been enough. In the book of Genesis, Lech Lecha can be understood that lecha is adding emphasis, like get going, or lecha could be understood as like go for yourself, for your own sake, or go into yourself, go on an inward journey to get to know your mind, your spirit, your true nature. Or perhaps just expressing encouragement, as in the phrase, "You go, girl." Everett Fox translates these words of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh to Avram as, "Go you forth from your land, from your kindred, from your father's house, to the land that I will let you see." Or as Debbie Friedman says in her beautiful song, Lech Lecha, "To a land that I will show you." These words tell us you need to leave the familiar and embark on a journey of uncertainty trusting that you will be guided to wherever you need to go, or that whatever arises will be exactly what you need in that moment for your spiritual practice. The message is, you don't know where you are going, but I will show you the way. Fast forward four books later in Torah, and after generations of leaving and returning, of exile and wandering, the children of Israel are being led into the promised land by Moses, who will not be able to join them, as will none of his generation. And again, God uses the repetition, actually in the fourth book, Bamidbar, the command Shlach Lecha, which has been translated as send for yourself. And here, as Aviva Zornberg highlights in one of her commentaries, Lecha can have a darker meaning, which I could appreciate only when I compared it with the earlier intention of Lech Lecha. Because in Lech Lecha, God sends Avram, then Avram, on a spiritual journey of discovery, a journey in which not having a particular destination in mind, not knowing where he is going, being completely open to whatever God will reveal is essential. Knowing the destination of the journey would not lead to the same intimacy with the experience that comes with not knowing, with the need to be alert in each moment to whatever God is revealing. So Zornberg translates or comments on Shlach Lecha as send for yourself, like with a connotation that God is saying with some frustration, okay, if you doubt me, if you're not trusting enough just to stay on this path as it unfolds, go see for yourself. But as we learn, the mission does not turn out well. The scouts go out and return with a conviction that the inhabitants of the land are giants and the Israelites will appear to them like grasshoppers. Their fear whips the camp into hysteria, you know, making the Israelites rail against Moses and Aaron. If only we had died in the land of Egypt. Let's go back. In this case, the story implies seeking to know, seeking certainty can backfire, especially when you're on a spiritual journey in which, again and again, you've been reminded that you're not able to control everything, that you need to be like Moses, alert for wondrous signs, like a bush that's burning but isn't being consumed. You need to be completely open to seeing whatever might be revealed. So, probably having just returned from 8 days of silent Zen practice in the beautiful Pacific Northwest, I am inspired to share some Zen teachings as commentary. One from an ancient Japanese record, and one from Sojun Mel Waitzman, the founder, abbot, and guiding teacher of the Berkeley Zen Center, who died recently in 2021 at the age of 91. First, the ancient Japanese story. A teacher asked his student, "Where are you going?" The student said, "Around on a pilgrimage." The teacher asked, "What is the purpose of the pilgrimage?" The student answered, "I don't know." The teacher said, "Not knowing is the most intimate." What does that mean? How does knowing keep us from having the clear vision that is exemplified by Moses, whose not knowing mind made it possible for him to notice the burning bush? If we are certain that we know the scientific nature of bushes that burn, we know they're going to just burn up, then we may not stop to look more closely, to notice something miraculous that's unfolding. Norman Fisher helps us to understand this story in his commentary from 2006 that's on the Everyday Zen website. He explains that the teacher is not asking the student just about his journey on a pilgrimage, but about his spiritual journey, which is, after all, about his life and about our lives. Where are we going in our lives? Norman elaborates, and what's the purpose? Why are we born? Why do we die? Why is life so difficult? Why are we always longing for something else? What do we really know of our mysterious and fleeting existence? The student confesses, is courageously honest. Many students might try to come up with an answer to hide their confusion, to avoid the risk of disappointing their teacher, to get the right answer. The student answers, "I don't know." And perhaps to his surprise, the teacher replies, "I don't know is just right. I don't know is most intimate." So the student is awakened by the teacher's response. He suddenly recognizes, as one often does in spiritual practice, that he had what he needed all along and he didn't know it. The right way is right beneath your feet and in every blade of grass. Norman goes on to explain that in Zen, the word intimacy is a synonym for enlightenment or awakening. And Norman says, intimacy is a much better word than those others. Zen, enlightenment, realization, awakening, all these words seem to imply some special state of mind or spirit, some kind of transformative mystical knowledge or experience that somehow will bring us beyond life's every day-to-day problems to a more spiritual plane. So the word intimacy is better. It sounds like we're getting closer, deeper, more loving with our experience than somehow getting beyond it. Intimacy better expresses what enlightenment really feels like, I think, says Norman. So how is it that not knowing is most intimate? And Norman explains, when I know, when I think I know, I bring myself forward, imposing myself and my experience on this moment. When I don't know, I let experience come forward and reveal itself. When I can let go of my experience, knowledge, and wisdom, I can be humble in the face of what is. And when I am humble, I am ready to be truly fearless and intimate. I can enter into this moment, which is always a new relationship, always fresh. I can be moved by what happens, fully engaged and open to what the situation will show me. And then Norman asks the most important question for our practice. Can we use this intention, this story, without beating ourselves up over our mind's tendency to create over and over more clever ways of knowing, grasping, holding on to the ever-fleeting and changing moment? Can we keep returning to the simple willingness to be present with what is, just to be there without getting caught up in what we hope will happen, what we fear will happen, what the scouts really saw, what they said? And on this retreat, Norman gave three talks. And in the last talk that he, third talk, he read a quote from a book that had recently been published posthumously following the death of the teacher, who was his teacher, who gave Dharma transmission to both Norman and his wife, Kathy Fisher. His teacher, Sojourn Mel Waitzman, founded and was head abbot of the Berkeley Zen Center for decades, dying only recently at 91. And he was a student of Suzuki Roshi, whose well-known book, Beginner's Mind, has been a primer for Zen practice for many students. So this is a quote from the chapter in the book called, or the part of a chapter in the book called Chasing Enlightenment. The book is called Seeing One Thing Through. And I think you'll see why I chose this passage. It echoes the theme of our current book of Torah, Bamidbar. It reminds us that the journey of the Israelites through the desert is a metaphor for our own spiritual journey, for our own life journey. And as in Torah, Mel Waitzman's account of the journey is filled with challenges and necessary losses. Chasing enlightenment, he writes, is like running across the desert. We want to get to the other side of the desert so badly that we're tempted to run, but we don't get very far running in the desert. After a few feet, we find it's too hard to run, so we try walking. When it's very hot, we walk very slowly, one step at a time. If we're carrying too much, we just leave it lying in the sand. Piece by piece, we unload our excess baggage and we just take one step at a time. And these are my words. I think this is exactly what it was like for the Israelites. They had to let go even of the few possessions they carried out of Egypt, including the whole generation of people who came out of Egypt, a symbolic enactment of letting go of our conditioned patterns of thinking. The people who were stuck in their old ways of thinking couldn't enter the land of awakening. They couldn't take this journey with the intimacy that was demanded on this spiritual journey. In order to let go of the old habits that keep us from seeing and from experiencing intimacy with the present moment, that generation symbolically had to die off. And I think as we age, we have a sense of letting go of things that we thought were essential, that we realize we don't really need for the next part of the journey, or for the place we're going to get to. Waitzman continues, finally, we find a comfortable way to get through the desert, walking steadily day after day, and it takes a long, long time. From time to time, we may come to an oasis. We drink the water and it's just wonderful. The oasis is a kind of awakening. At some point, we may have a wonderful refreshment called understanding, but we can't stay at the oasis. We have to leave it behind and continue on in the desert. The desert is just as hot as it always was, but now we have some confidence because we got to the oasis. We find, however, that the desert doesn't end and we have to continue forever in the desert. But we know how to walk the desert, so we find out how to do it continuously. The only way we can continue is to bring forth a strong, true spirit. If we can't bring forth that strong spirit, we can't continue. Since there's nothing else to do, we do it. And in the process, we find out that everything we need to know is right under our footsteps. So we'll take a few moments of silence before we have our discussion.